Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. Today we are featuring a new story by Ann Stringer. First, some business. Last month we had a contest for one listener to win the latest CD from Abney Park, Lost Horizons, The Continuing Adventures of Abney Park. I now have the pleasure of announcing that winner. And the winner is Roger Lyall. Congratulations, Roger. We will be contacting you. Thank you to everyone who entered our contest. Speaking of bands, are you part of a band? Are you friends with a great band? Variant Frequencies is looking for more bands to partner with, like we did with Abney Park. We love that band and have had a great time featuring their music. If you have a band that you think would fit with our stories, send me a note at variantfrequencies@gmail.com. Now, on to our story. Q by Ann Stringer. Waiting in line is an unfortunate reality in modern life. When Frank McMurtry finds himself in a mysterious line with an eclectic group of strangers, he doesn't want to be there. But is it better to stay or walk away? Frank McMurtry stood in line. He had a terrible feeling that he should know where he was and why he was there. But he didn't. He wondered if that meant the onset of Alzheimer's. Ever since that particular disorder put his uncle into the nursing home, he worried every time he couldn't find his keys. So, he recited his address and his phone number to himself. Flawless. He also knew his social security number and his car's license plate. Didn't that mean he was okay? He thought so. None of that helped him figure out where he was in that moment. The line inched forward and he moved with it. Whatever they were waiting for wasn't happening very fast. Frank took a moment to look around at the unfamiliar surroundings. Dusk, apparently. But the sky had a brownish cast, like Los Angeles with a bad inversion. The streetlights were just coming on. They looked like old-fashioned gas lights. A moth fluttered in tight circles toward it, then beat itself against the glass case. The line stretched ahead and disappeared around the corner of a red brick building. Behind him, the end of the line was lost in the brownish haze.
"Pardon me, young man."
Frank felt a tug at his sleeve and looked down. A very old, very tiny woman had a bit of his shirt in her hand and looked up at him, through glasses too big for her face. She let go once she had his attention.
"Pardon me,"
she said again.
"I was wondering if you'd let me go ahead of you. I've been waiting an awfully long time."
He wanted very much to ask her where they were and what the line was for, but he hated the thought of looking like an idiot in front of all those people, so he simply said, "Sure." She beamed up at him, thanked him, and then tugged at the sleeve of the woman ahead of him in line and repeated her request. She let the elderly lady move on, but Frank's attention remained with the younger woman. She held an infant to her shoulder. A boy, Frank guessed, judging by the color of his outfit. The baby regarded Frank solemnly with big brown eyes. Frank smiled at him, the way people do at babies. But the little guy didn't smile back.
"Stupid son of a bitch,"
the mother hissed, startling Frank. It wasn't directed at him, though, but at the tall young man who stood ahead of her in line.
"Come on, baby,"
he responded, his tone pleading.
"It was the only way we could all be together."
"I don't want to be together," she snapped. "Why can't you get that through your fat head?"
"We're a family. We belong together. That's my son you're holding, baby."
"Stop calling me that,"
she muttered, and fell silent. Not wanting to appear intrusive, Frank turned and looked behind him. Next in line was a young man in a t-shirt and jeans. His hair was rumpled as if he'd just rolled out of bed and joined the line. He looked up at Frank, then behind him, wondering, maybe, if anyone would overhear. Then he looked back at Frank and motioned him a little closer.
"What are we doing here?"
he whispered. "I don't know." Frank was relieved that he wasn't the only one who didn't know. He leaned a little closer.
"I don't even know how I got here."
"Me either, man. Last thing I knew, I was..."
He stopped abruptly, as if he'd almost said too much, and glanced behind him. Frank did too. An elderly couple stood there hand in hand, smiling. The young guy didn't seem to want to ask them. He folded his arms across his chest and stared at the sidewalk. The line inched forward again, and Frank shuffled with it. The tiny old woman was at the corner already, still tugging sleeves.
"You were what?" he asked the young guy behind him, because he couldn't remember what he'd been doing before he found himself in line. The kid just looked at him for a few seconds, then seemed to make a decision. He shrugged.
"I was cooking some primo shit," he said softly.
It took Frank a few long moments to figure that one out.
"You mean..." he said finally.
"You mean drugs?"
Despite the situation, the kid grinned.
"Yeah. Don't worry, man. I don't have any with me."
He reached into his pockets.
"I don't have anything with me."
Frank checked his own pockets and found them empty.
"What the hell?" he said.
He never went anywhere without his wallet and keys.
"I know, right?"
kid said, shaking his head.
"This can't be good. I said don't touch me, goddammit!"
came the young woman ahead of them in line. She had turned from her companion and was shielding the baby from him with her own body.
"And don't touch Bobby. How can you even think I'd let you hold him after what you did?" "Baby, that's all behind us now."
The man's tone was calmer, more reasonable than hers.
"Like hell it is," she snapped. "And if you think you're going to the same place as us, you're even crazier than I thought." "We're all going to the same place, honey," he replied. "That's how it is." "That's bullshit. You lost us a long time ago. You don't get to be with us now."
She held the baby so tightly the child wailed in protest.
"Go to hell, David."
A few more shuffled steps. They were nearly at the corner. Frank checked his wrist, but there was no watch there. Though it seemed that time had passed, the twilight had not changed. The tiny woman who was so eager to reach the front of the line was long out of sight. Frank heaved an aggravated sigh.
"Don't be in such a hurry, young man," said the elderly man behind them. "There's plenty of time," he smiled at his companion. "After all, where else do you have to go?"
Frank could think of any number of places he'd rather be, but he said nothing. The line lapsed into silence. The junkie behind him fidgeted, but no one spoke. At the moment, Frank realized the street was unnaturally quiet. It might be dusk or early dawn, but it seemed that somebody should be out and about. There was no traffic on this street at all.
He looked at the light post on the corner ahead, but it bore no street name. The moth was still there, flying in crazy circles. He shifted uneasily. A few more steps. He was close enough for a look around the corner. He froze for a moment, taking it all in, until he felt a nudge from behind.
"Well?"
said the young man next in line, in a rough whisper.
"What is it?"
"See for yourself." The two of them watched. The tiny old lady had reached the head of the line and beamed up at the face of a tall figure wearing a hooded brown robe. Like a priest in a cult ceremony, his hands swept in the direction of a large boat that was docked at the shore of a river, too wide to see across. The horizon was lost in mist. Frank thought he saw an occasional light twinkle, but he couldn't be sure.
"It looks sort of like that Staten Island ferry,"
the kid said finally. "Only smaller," Frank agreed. "What the hell are we doing waiting in line for the Staten Island ferry?"
"And what's up with that dude?"
"Poor dears,"
said the elderly woman, still holding her husband's hand.
"They don't know."
"Don't know what?" Frank asked, not taking his gaze from the boat. A simple narrow plank led from the dock to the deck. The tiny white-haired woman stepped onto it, testing it, then walking confidently across. She beamed at her fellow passengers and found herself a seat near the rail. Other passengers boarded more tentatively. The line moved more quickly. But people were bunched up near the dock, so back at the corner they weren't able to progress yet.
"Don't be frightened,"
the lady behind them said. She, too, was watching the people board the ferry. But there was no trepidation in her eyes. She almost glowed like a new bride. Her husband kissed her temple lightly.
"This is the River Styx," he explained. "That ferry will take us to the land of the dead."
His wife nodded.
"And a brand new adventure," she said.
Frank and the junkie both turned and stared at them. Frank's jaw worked a few times, but no words came out. Finally, he managed.
"That is the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard."
The woman nodded sympathetically.
"It's always harder when you don't know it's coming."
"I'm not dead!"
"No need to raise your voice, dear."
Others in line were watching them, and a few of them chuckled.
"Of course you are."
"How did I die, then?"
"Well, I'm sure I don't know," she replied. "Perhaps a heart attack. Do you remember any chest pain?"
"No, I don't remember any chest pain," Frank said, trying hard to keep a civil tone. "Maybe a bit of a headache."
"Aneurysm," the man said, and he and his wife nodded at each other.
"What about me?"
the junkie asked.
"Drug overdose, most likely," said the woman, gently patting his arm.
He frowned.
"Yeah, I guess that would make sense."
"None of this makes sense,"
Frank hissed, trying to keep his voice down. The line was moving more quickly, and they were nearing the plank. Some of the passengers crossed with difficulty, nearly tumbling into the dark water. Others walked it like it was no more frightening than a sidewalk. One little girl even skipped across. Then the young couple with the baby came to the plank.
"You first,"
he said to her.
"Chicken shit,"
she said. But she didn't argue the point. The baby had fallen asleep on her shoulder. She crossed gingerly, but she made it, and turned to look back at him. After she was across, he stepped onto the board.
"I'm coming, baby,"
he said.
"Then we'll be together forever."
The next step was wobbly, and he paused, his arms held out for balance. One more step, and his arms windmilled into a vain attempt to keep him upright. Then he fell backwards into the murky water. People on the dock and on the boat watched. Frank glanced quickly at the brown-robed man, but he showed no interest in the incident at all. The young man sank without a sound, then bobbed to the surface, gasping and coughing.
"Isn't somebody going to help him?" Frank shouted.
But no one moved. The man sank again, and Frank knelt, leaning over the edge of the dock and extending a hand. He saw the young man surface again and strained toward him.
"Swim for it!"
he said. But the young man sank again, his eyes wide with terror. That close to the water, Frank was able to see what had been only murky darkness. He saw that the young man was not alone in the water. Others crowded around him, pulling him deeper until they flowed away with the sluggish current and out of sight. Frank almost lost his balance and toppled in, but a hand grasping his shirt saved him.
"You couldn't have helped him, dear," said the old woman. "You would have ended up in there with him."
"How do you know that?"
he asked, still sitting on the dock.
"How could you possibly know that?"
She didn't answer. Maybe she didn't have an answer for him. They watched as the plank was withdrawn from the ferry. A gate was chained into place, and the boat pulled slowly away. The young mother held her sleeping child and stared back at the people who waited on the dock. The tiny woman sat up straight in her chair, her gaze directed ahead of the boat.
"Don't worry," the old woman said. "Another one will be along."
She didn't say how she knew that, either. Frank could not have said how long he waited on the bank, silently gazing out over the water into the mist. It seemed like hours, but the light never changed. The sun neither rose nor set. Finally, the junkie spoke.
"There it is," he said,
his voice quavering a little, and then he reached down and helped Frank to his feet.
"You're next."
Another boat, identical to the first, glided toward the dock. It made no sound except the lapping of waves against its hull. It slid into place at the dock and stopped. The plank extended. The chain dropped. The brown-robed sentinel took his place. Even this close, Frank could not see a face in that hood. Frank stepped up to the plank, then hesitated. He looked behind him where the junkie anxiously awaited.
"Go on,"
the kid said. Frank stepped back. "I'm not going," he said.
"Oh, I don't think you can do that, dude."
"Why?" Frank asked. "Who's going to make us get on? This guy?" He jerked a thumb toward the boatman, who stood as impassive as a statue.
"You're making a grave mistake, young man," the old woman said. "No pun intended."
"There's nothing for any of us here anymore," her husband added. "If you stay, you'll wander all alone. The living won't see you or talk to you. All you can do is watch them live their lives. Do you have a wife? You'll see her go on without you."
The woman laid a hand on his arm.
"Don't you have someone waiting for you?"
She nodded toward the ferry.
"On the other side?"
Frank considered this. His father, who had slapped him around and proclaimed him worthless, was long dead. So was his mother, who spent her time weeping or reeking of alcohol. His grandfather was too much like Dad. Grandmother was sweet, but he hardly knew her. There were no siblings or any other relatives he cared about. "No," he said finally.
"Then you should go over and be there for your loved ones when they pass."
"I don't owe them anything," Frank said stubbornly, stepping away from the plank. "Come on," he said to the junkie. "Let's stay. This is all insane. We don't know what's over there."
"Nah,"
said the younger man.
I do know what's here, and it ain't worth staying for.
He put a foot on the plank. It wobbled precariously. He took another step, then another, his arms held out to the sides. The board tipped, and he dove and then scrambled and rolled onto the boat's deck. He landed on his back, panting, then jumped to his feet and raised his fists overhead.
Yeah!
He shouted triumphantly.
Are you all nuts? Frank said. This is insane. And you aren't questioning any of it. What's over there? Hell? Is that where you want to be? And who's this guy?
He waved a hand at the ferryman.
Karen? Aren't we supposed to have coins on our eyes to pay the fare?
The brown hood bent forward, then moved slowly side to side in a gesture of denial. A deep, ominous voice rumbled forth.
Oh, please,
it said. After a long, stunned silence, Frank stepped back. I'm not going, he said firmly. The old couple stepped up and crossed together easily. Frank turned and walked away, passing along the line that still stretched into the mist. The people there stared and whispered to each other, but further back they ignored him, and then didn't seem to see him at all. Gradually they faded from his sight. He looked behind him then, but saw no gas lights. The brown mist had lifted, and the sun was shining. He heard car horns and footsteps and voices. He saw people, living people, rushing to get to work. They walked right through him.
Thank you for listening to Q by Ann Stringer. To find out more about variant frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. If you like variant frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Ann Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
Managers. Do you have problems with workers coming in late, leaving early, and taking too long of a lunch break? Let's face it, employees these days are not hardworking. They're too busy checking email, reading blogs, chatting with their new friend in Sweden, who's really a hairy guy from Duluth, or, God forbid, listening to podcasts, to be of any real use to you. This is where Zombink can help you. We are, among other things, a zombie placement service that will supply you with workers that will work tirelessly around the clock. They don't need breaks. They don't need Social Security. And if there's a workplace accident, there's none of that pesky short-term disability or lawsuits. Simply return the damaged zombie to us, and you'll be supplied with a new one. Think of Zombink when you see that lifeless, uninterested look in your living employee's eyes. At least with zombies, that lifeless, uninterested look will be on the face of a hard worker. Zombink can supply you with workers for construction, farming, security, janitorial services, and web design. And we're adding new services every month. Please visit our website at zombink.net to order your own service today. Clients of Zombink are responsible for the well-being of their human employees, customers, and visitors. Employ zombies at your own risk. All mutilations, dismemberments, death, or the transfer of the zombie curse are the responsibility of the client, not Zombink. You're hiring zombies. What do you expect?
This is Edward G. Talbot, author of the podcast novel, New World Orders, www.edwardgtalbot.com, and I have a question for you. Do you think you know what's going on? Do you think the CIA killed Kennedy? Or that politicians in Washington, D.C. are actually in charge? And what about global warming? Is it a left-wing hallucination? A right-wing cover-up? Or maybe it's neither. Maybe the truth is far more sinister. There is a conspiracy. But it's not just one party. And it's not to protect anything as mundane as billion-dollar profits. Of course, it's just a novel. Right? Go to www.edwardgtalbot.com and listen to New World Orders now, before it's too late.